Hi, this is Tanya Roberts, Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Welcome, Comic Book Nation. This is Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Actually, I should say, welcome to the jungle. Today, we are celebrating the 30th anniversary of the 1984 flick Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, chatting with the star of that film, Tanya Roberts. Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, is the golden-haired jungle goddess who came alive during the golden age of comic books. Created by Will Eisner, who would later go on to create The Spirit, and Jerry Iger, Sheena has much in common with her male counterpart, Tarzan. She's skilled at using knives, bows, and spears. She can communicate with animals and chooses vine swinging as her preferred method of transportation. Sheena even holds an important place in history. After debuting in the UK in 1937 and in the United States in 1938 in the magazines Wags and Jumbo Comics, respectively, Sheena became the first female character with her own comic book title in 1942 when she beat Wonder Woman to the newsstands by a mere few months. A 26-episode television series starring Irish McCalla premiered in the mid-50s, but it took another 30 years to bring Sheena to the big screen. Since the movie would be shot entirely on location in Kenya, Africa, would utilize numerous wild animals, and would feature an incredibly strong female lead, producers needed an equally strong actress who was up for the rigors of filming. They found their Sheena in actress Tanya Roberts. The Bronx-born Roberts started her showbiz career in modeling, but soon found herself on one of the top-rated shows of all time, Charlie's Angels. Coming in on the fifth and final season of the detective series, Tanya's streetwise Julie Rogers was just as comfortable throwing a punch as she was drawing her pistol. But it was her role as Kiri in the 1982 fantasy film and HBO staple The Beastmaster that showed Tanya could easily take on the role of Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. The following year, Tanya's Fanboy Hall of Fame status was secured when she appeared alongside Roger Moore in his final 007 outing as geologist Stacy Sutton in 1985's A View to a Kill. Well, my guest today is the only woman on the planet who can lay claim to being one of Charlie's Angels and a Bond girl. And if that isn't enough, she was also the Queen of the Jungle. She is Tanya Roberts. Tanya, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, no worries. We appreciate your time. You know what? You make quite a few personal appearances at conventions, things like that. You interact with your fans a lot. Which of those titles gets the most attention, would you say?
The Bond.
Silly question, right? That's the biggest one. What kind of reaction do you get from fans when they're talking about the Bond movies?
Oh, how is it to work with Roger? Who was your favorite Bond guy? How is it to work with Roger? Where did you go on location? You know, all those kinds of questions.
Good. We'll get into those as we go through. Something else I found out about you. You are an avid golfer.
Yes, I am.
When did you take up the sport?
I picked it up when I was about 38.
What's your handicap?
Well, it's about 20 now.
Okay. What do you like about it? What kind of got you into the sport? Was there anybody in particular?
It keeps your mind on only golf when you're playing it, and it takes your mind off all your other problems.
Did you say it was calming?
Even though it's frustrating.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're playing a different sport than I'm playing.
It takes your mind off all your other real problems in life, which are much worse.
Yes, that's true. You don't throw clubs?
I have been known to throw a couple.
No, I have been known to throw quite a few myself as well. Have you ever hit the links with Cheryl Ladd? We see her out there.
No, I never have.
Interesting. And none of the other Charlie's Angels? Anybody out there?
None of them play.
Let's talk a little bit about Charlie's Angels. You were Julie Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And you were hired to replace Shelley Hack. How difficult was that for you to step into this really high-profile series, replacing another actress?
I was too young to know any better. I was 24 and I was just too young to know any better. And so I just took it and did it, and they were all very welcoming. And
was this your first big-time gig?
Young. Really, yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's, you are right in the spotlight, right off the bat. What's that like? I mean, was it just overwhelming, or were you able to process it at all?
It was overwhelming in a way, because I thought, what do I deserve? Why do I deserve to be famous for what? Getting a part in a show? So that was overwhelming. And just all the things I had to do and all the interviews and everything was strange.
What was in your background? I mean, how did you were modeling first and then kind of segued into acting. So how did that process work out before leading up to Charlie's Angels?
I did some modeling, and then I did some off Broadway in New York, and then I came out to California for the Betsy, which I never did because I looked too much like Leslie Ann Down. So they cut me out of that. And then I came back for the Charlie's Angels.
You were born and raised in the Bronx?
Yeah.
Did any of that upbringing kind of play into the character of Julie Rogers? Because she was, in my opinion, kind of one of the tougher angels.
Yeah, she was the one who was the tough one. Yes, yeah, so it did help me.
What was it like to work on the set? Because, I mean, again, a high-profile show. What were the other actors like on the set?
Everybody was great. They were very welcoming. It was the last year of the show, so they were really glad to be finishing.
Did you know it was the last year of the show when you were on it?
Yeah, we knew. Everybody knew, because they had 5-year contracts and they weren't going to stay.
So that's kind of a sweet gig where you can come in, just do your thing, and then not be overwhelmed by the machinery of it.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of knew it was last year, and so what could I do? So I knew I'd have to move on from there.
Cool gig, though, because you got to go right to Hawaii right off the bat, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. We went to Hawaii for the first 6 episodes, I think.
Did you inherit the mantle of official bikini wearer from Cheryl Ladd?
Yep, absolutely.
Did she tell you that?
Yep, she said, thank God there's someone else who can wear bikinis.
What was the, I mean, obviously you didn't care. I mean, you're young at that point, but... like, how did you play that as an actress? How do you, because obviously, you know, the show is what the show is, but how do you as an actress approach it? Because you have to be serious on some level because you're fighting crime and taking out bad guys, so.
Oh, yeah, we played it seriously. We played certain things tongue-in-cheek, but most of it was serious.
What was David Doyle like to work with? He seems like he would be...
great. Really sweet. Very supportive and very sweet and very nice.
A practical joker on the set? Does he, I mean...
Yeah, he once mooned us all.
Just random? Was there anything setting this up?
No, he just randomly mooned us.
Is he off camera and you guys are on camera or what?
He was off camera and we were on camera.
Trying to break you up?
Yep, and he did it.
Oh, so you had to break the scene?
Yeah.
He seems like that would be like the best job ever. Did he... kind of express that on his end?
Yeah, he said it's great to work with 3 beautiful women.
On a high-profile show, huge ratings, and getting paid for it.
Yeah. He loved it.
Overall, what was your experience with Charlie's Angels then? How do you kind of look back at this?
Oh, it was great. It was great fun. It was a great introduction to show business, and I had a great time doing it.
Have you seen any of the follow-up projects, the movies? They had a couple rebooted TV shows.
Well, the movies were great. The television series was terrible. But, you know, it's hard to, you know, who knows what will happen in another 10 years. You know what I'm saying?
It's hard to capture lightning in a bottle again. That's always the toughest part. Did you, was Beastmaster your first big screen kind of starring role? I know you had done some things up till then, but was that sort of your, you know, name up in lights on the marquee for that one?
Yeah, that really was.
Did you get that straight off of Charlie's Angels?
Yes, right after Charlie's Angels. And then I got the Bond movie because of it.
What do you like better, those sort of high fantasy type roles, or do you prefer kind of going modern day dramas?
I like people movies and comedies. I loved doing that 70s show. That was my favorite job.
Well, plus you've got the live audience, too.
Oh, it's so much more helpful than when you're just playing in front of the camera. You get the immediate feedback.
Well, yeah, you know when something works.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, when you're very young on Beastmaster, when you're going through this, what's that like to be in a huge role? And I guess coming only a few months after Conan, so you've got this sort of sword and sandals kind of genre flick. It's bug nuts crazy, the movie itself. I mean, when you watch it, there's just so much going on that's just amazing. What's it like to be just a young actress kind of thrown into that world?
It was great. It was, everyone was like very helpful and very friendly, and the script was good, and I had no problems. Again, I've never really had been overwhelmed by jobs that I've gotten.
What do you remember about your time on that as Kiri and also working with Mark Singer?
He was terrific. He was in the best shape of any human I've ever seen. This guy worked out. Oh, my God, did he work out. And he was terrific and sweet as can be. And we had a lot of fun doing it, working with all the animals and everything.
It was a modest success when it was in the theaters, but... Man, did it explode afterward? Like you think about
it. Sure did.
It's just like it was on TBS constantly. It was on HBO constantly. When did you first get a sense that, oh, this thing has life beyond the theater?
Yeah, I sort of did when I knew that it was on TBS all the time. People would call me up and say, hey, I just saw you on Beastmaster. Hey, I just saw you on Beastmaster. So I knew it was playing like crazy, and that's when I knew it was like an underground hit.
Was it kind of, how's that for you as an actress when you put all that time in, and it's a modest success, but it's not obviously blowing up like Conan with Schwarzenegger did, but then all of a sudden you realize, oh, people are still talking about this all these years later. How do you kind of wrap your brain around all that?
Well, I guess you're happy that it has some success, and you're just happy that it got its due, whether it became... a right off the shelf hit or whether it gained popularity over time. The point is that people saw it.
People are still talking about it. Yeah, that's for sure. Quick question about that movie. Did they dye that tiger?
Yeah, with food dye.
What? were there PETA people hanging around? Or what?
They didn't hurt him at all.
What's the deal in that thing? Like, how long did it take the tiger to get to look like that? And how do you...
I don't know. I have no idea. They would do that way early, and then it would stay on about a week, I guess.
How do you paint a tiger?
Don't ask me.
Very carefully, right?
Yeah, very carefully, like two porcupines making love.
I watched this thing and I'm like, man, whose job was it to color that tiger? That had to be
it was the animal handlers.
Well, they did an interesting job. So, hey,
you mentioned
the Bond film. We'll talk about that before we get into Sheena a little bit. But how in the world did you get into the world of Bond? Geologist Stacey Sutton, because that has to be one of the most sought after gigs for actresses, is Bond girl.
I'll tell you, he had seen me in the Playboy issue I did of The Beastmaster and offered me the role.
And this is?
Cubby Broccoli.
Producer Cubby Broccoli on the film. Again, not unlike Charlie's Angels, you're kind of coming in at the end of an era, like you did with Charlie's Angels. In this case, this was Roger Moore's final outing as 007. You know, I'm curious about this because in Roger Moore's new book, I don't know if you had a chance to look at it.
No, I haven't.
It's Bond on Bond. He covers basically all the Bond films. Here's what he said. He says, in my final outing, I was joined by Mary Staven, Fiona Fullerton, Tanya Roberts, and Grace Jones. A day in a hot tub with Fiona could never be considered work, could it? And floating away on board a submarine with Mary Staven must be many men's dreams. As to the others, I'll leave it there, I think. And that's it. So I'm curious, what was your relationship like with Roger Moore? Did that...
Fine on the set, but then somebody spread a bad rumor about us, and so
okay, what happened?
Ended up strange. I don't know if somebody spread a rumor.
Let's get the details. Who's the person?
What rumor did they spread?
Who is this horrible, awful person?
You're not going to get it from me, Joe.
You're not going to write a book, Tanya on Bond?
No.
I'm just curious because, what on set, what kind of relationship did you have with Roger? What was he like to work with?
Absolutely fine. We never had a problem. It was after the movie ended.
Have you talked with him? Have you spoken with him at all since then?
No.
Events, any Bond things like that?
No.
That's interesting. Yeah, you find out these things. But not many actresses get a chance to be, swept up in the Bond phenomena. Tell us what that's like, just from the casting phase on through the production phase and then obviously the promotion.
Well, it's a six-month shoot, and we shot all over Europe and all over England and then in San Francisco. And it was great. It was first class all the way, Cubby Broccoli. I mean, we had all of our lunches served on tablecloths with sterling silver cutlery. I mean, it was very classy, and he was wonderful to work for.
Was it what you expected, or did it more than you expected?
More than I expected, yeah, way more. Nothing like anything I had ever worked on before.
What goes through your mind as an actress? You're cast. You're the new Bond girl. What does that do for you?
I at first thought it might be a jinx, like being a Charlie's Angels might be a jinx, because none of the Bond women ever went on to have careers of their own. So I thought, I don't know if I should take it or not. My agent said, "Are you kidding? take it. So I took it.
It's a pretty high-profile gig. I mean, did you have fun doing it, or was that? I mean, it looks like a ton of work.
It was a ton of work, but it was fun.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised that they didn't play up your toughness. Because you got kind of that smoky voice. You're from the Bronx. You're coming off of Charlie's Angels, where you're basically playing a street fighter. Now, not necessarily that the character was written that way, but I was a little surprised that they didn't play up more of your tough angle.
Yeah, well, they gave that to Grace Jones. I was the nice girl.
Was there any way you could bring some of that? What did you bring into the role of Stacy that you kind of were like, you know what, I'm going to bring a little bit of Tanya into this?
I was just a nice girl, and so it wasn't a lot of fun. It was very kind of boring, to be perfectly honest. The good part was the Grace Jones part.
That, well, yeah, the villains always get the to chew on the scenery a little bit. What was she like? Did you get to interact much with her?
Funny as can be.
It seems extreme. Like, there's no... It's always, like, 110%, I would imagine, nonstop.
Yeah, she's a wild woman.
How did that translate on the set? How do you rein that in when you've just got to get a scene done? Or do you?
She was totally professional on the set, but she was a wild woman off the set.
You got to do a pretty cool action scene with Roger Moore. There's the scene in the elevator shaft where you guys are both trapped and... basically, you're just engulfed in flames. How dangerous, were you in any danger at all? Any interesting stories coming out of that?
It wasn't really dangerous, although it was hot. It was very hot, but it wasn't dangerous.
You're really in the middle of some flames there.
Well, it looks like we are, and there are some flames, but nothing that could really hurt us.
You're pretty safe.
Yeah, I felt pretty safe. Maybe I was, being ignorance is bliss kind of an attitude, but I felt safe.
You got a chance to work with Christopher Walken on that movie as well?
Yeah, he was great too.
Do you have a Christopher Walken impression? Everybody's got one.
No, I don't have one.
Come on, you had to. Were people doing Christopher Walken impressions to Christopher Walken?
No, not that I remember. But he certainly has a style about him, that's for sure.
One of the things I'm always curious about when I watch the film is, couldn't the wardrobe department have provided some more sensible shoes for you in the mineshaft?
Never do. It's how do the legs look.
You're running around in this thing. You're running around in like high heels, aren't you?
Oh, they weren't high heels.
They look like... they're not work boots.
No, they're not work boots, that's for sure.
But did you at any... Did you at any time just go, guys, can I get a little something that I can walk around with a little better?
Well, there were plenty of times when I wore sneakers, and then when they had to do the full-length shots, I wore high heels.
Yeah, it was a little bit amazing. And you know what? We're talking about Bond. It's well, you know, it's over 50 years that this whole kind of Bond universe has been going on. We have a question from one of our friends over at the podcast, The Bondcast, Laird Malamud. He asks, what is your favorite Bond film? Other than A View to a Kill.
Of course.
Well, taking that one out of the mix, we know that one. But beyond that, what's your favorite Bond film?
Let me see. I guess my favorite is Goldfinger.
That's a good one. That's mine. Why is that? I know why it's my favorite Bond film. Why is it yours?
I just loved when they painted her gold, and I thought it was fascinating. I really liked it.
Yeah, the iconic imagery that comes out of that flick is just amazing. Plus, you got the car, you've got the theme song, all the gadgets. Very cool stuff. How about your favorite Bond girl, other than yourself, again?
I guess it would be Shirley Eaton.
From Goldfinger again.
Or Ursula Andress.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong with Ursula Andress. Had you kind of looked at any of the Bond films leading up to that, or how did you prepare to be in a Bond film?
Oh, I didn't. I just took it on as a job, and I knew all the Bond movies, and, you know, there was really nothing to prepare except my lines.
How do you, I mean, Roger Moore, obviously, huge career up to that point. What were you able to learn anything from him, or what kind of conversations did you have? Was he giving you pointers?
He was a total pro on the set. He was always in a good mood. He always had jokes to tell. He was terrific.
He was really
a good guy.
We see those pictures too. You know, when you read some of these books, you see Roger Moore. He's always, you know, got the cigar going, and it always looks like he's cracking jokes or doing something. Anything that we don't know that happened on the set that we'd be interested to find out between you and Roger?
Nothing that is next rated.
It is a family friendly podcast. What are some things that you can tell us? What were some of the cool, funny parts? Whether it was with Roger or Christopher Walken or whoever.
Well, when we were in the blimp, we almost went down.
Well, you say that, I mean, you're not in an actual blimp.
We were in a little mini blimp, yeah.
You were in an actual blimp on those scenes?
A mini blimp.
Little technical difficulties? What happened there?
No, I don't really know what, but it just started to shake, rattle, and roll, and I was a little scared.
In ways that it shouldn't have been shaking, rattling, and rolling?
At least I thought it shouldn't have been.
You think somebody was maybe trying to get a little bit of terror out of you on the outside
maybe,
of it?
Maybe.
What are some other things you remember from that movie that kind of stand out?
Just that when we were outside of Paris and we were shooting in the place where the horses were kept, it was the most beautiful stable I ever saw, in Chantier. And it was just, the wardrobe was incredible, and all the people working on it were first rate, first class. So it was a pretty amazing experience.
Well, and that's one thing about the Bond films is that they never, I mean, they don't look like they're shot on a back lot. I mean, they go to where they need to go.
They're definitely not.
You had that experience as well on the movie that we want to focus on today here on Comic Book Central, Sheena, Queen of the Jungle from 1984. 2014 is the 30th anniversary of the film. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I know. I can't. No, it's an amazing, amazing thing. We went to Kenya and brought a lot of wild animals with us who stayed on reserves after we left. And it was amazing.
This movie was shot entirely on location, correct?
In Kenya, yeah.
It looks amazing. The cinematographer, is it Pasqualino De Santis?
Yes. Exactly.
He won an Academy Award for Romeo and Juliet. The film looks stunning.
Oh, he was the best cinematographer. Just fantastic.
What were some of the things he did? Because the look of the film is spectacular. What were some of the things that you saw him doing? And what were some of the background that gives the film that look?
Well, we shot all out in the jungle and on the plains, and we actually followed herds of cows with their baby calf elephants with helicopters, and so we could shoot in front of them. And we worked a lot with the tribal people there, and it was just amazing.
Had you known much about the character of Sheena going into it?
Just what I had heard and read when I was reading the comic books.
So you did a little crash course homework with some of the comic books?
Sure.
What kind of research and preparation did you do from the comic book end?
The preparation I did was I worked out with a weightlifter for months to get my arms strong and my legs strong. And then I just took on the character of a strong survivalist who managed to make it from her childhood in the jungle.
I don't know if too many people know this, and to be honest, I didn't know it as well. This character really has some major league history here, because Sheena was created by Will Eisner and Jerry Iger. Will Eisner, of course, with a spirit. Her first appearance was in the U.K., about a year before Superman, which is amazing. And Sheena was the first female character to have her own comic book, beating Wonder Woman by a couple of months. So the title Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, she had that title, that titled book came out about 3 months before Wonder Woman.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you've got a character on your resume here that has some major league comic book history. Just for our fans listening, too, Marvel Super Special, issue 34, was the official adaptation of Sheena. Great, not only great artwork and the adapting the movie, but in the back of it, a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, some articles, some great shots of you in action as Sheena. So it's Marvel Super Special 34. Check that out. But the movie Sheena itself, the producer Paul Arito had been trying to get this thing made for the better part of a decade, I think.
I know. A friend of mine, yes.
I think originally Raquel Welch was.
Oh,
kinda,
really? I didn't even know that.
I think, and then it just got kind of hung up, in development limbo for a while. But then you were brought on board, and then you're off to Kenya and animals. I mean, is this, I think you've been quoted in other interviews as saying this was the project that you've sort of embraced the most.
Well, I did, because I love the animals so much. I'm an animal freak. And so working with all the animals was great fun for me. I broke in the elephant. The elephant had never been ridden, nor did they tell me. And they just put a ladder up on and hoisted me up. And the elephant, luckily, was very sweet and didn't give me a problem.
This Chango the elephant?
Chango the elephant, is that what his name was? I don't remember.
I think so. I think the elephant was Chango. The zebra was Marika. Was that that wasn't a zebra, though.
No, they were...
You guys are out there using food coloring again, right?
Yeah, exactly.
On a horse. What is it with you in movies where they're using food coloring on the animals?
Well, you can't ride zebra because they have a very strange gait and it's bumpy, so you can't ride them. Nobody can ride them. That's why they don't use them as hauling animals or anything else over there.
Only Sheena. And only Sheena can ride them.
Yeah, only Sheena.
Talk about bringing these live animals in. There's one scene. There's one scene in there where Donovan Scott is surrounded by lions. You kind of swing in, you land on the cart, which is very cool. First of all, you're swinging in on those vines by yourself, right?
Yep.
This isn't on a set for people who haven't seen the movie. I mean, you're in the jungle swinging down a pretty good distance on these vines, right?
Yes. I did most of my own, most of my own special effects.
What preparations did you put in to be able to do that?
A lot of time in the high wire, working in White Oak with the guy who does celebrities circus. So I worked with him a lot and learned how to swing and learned how to land and all that stuff.
How many takes on that car landing?
Probably about five or six.
Okay. You didn't nail it the first time, though?
No.
Did you miss the, did you miss?
I just fell.
Off the vine?
Off the car.
Can we see these on like some special DVD release at some point? That
no.
would be interesting. You weren't hurt, were you?
So. No, no, no.
Okay, so it took a little bit of finessing to
practice.
Get. Yeah. Now that scene, so you swing down, you land on top of the car, Ted Wass is freaking out, and Donovan Scott is just like surrounded by lions. Was he really, or did they just do a really good job at doing some superimposing?
They did a really good job.
Okay.
Because we only had two lions with us.
Okay, but were the lions in the scene at all?
I just don't remember. I had no, we had two lions in the scene.
Okay, because there's shots, they're coming in. There's a shot where they're in the car, and the lion comes in the car and has his like paw on Donovan. And
yeah.
Did that happen, or did they just do a...
That was our trained lion that we brought.
Okay, so that lion is actually interacting with him.
Yes.
Okay, really? Like, how does that work? How are you not freaking out when you're dealing with this? Even a trained lion, because they freak out.
Well, because they were very, very mellow, and you just got to know them a little bit, and you felt secure with the trainers there.
Though that scene is incredible because you're actually interacting with these animals. And of course, you're riding the lion, you're riding the zebra/horse. How do you, as an actress, how do you train to go through all that? That's got to be the most unique experience you've ever had acting.
Well, yeah. Well, I've been riding horses my whole life. So they wanted someone who was comfortable on horseback. And
but not elephants.
No, but still, elephants are way easier to ride than horses when you're riding them through plains with huckabees and wildebeest. So I was just a really good rider, and I rode bareback, and it was, I just hung on for dear life.
The screenplay was originally written by David Newman, who comic book fans will realize he wrote co-wrote the original Superman movie. And then Lorenzo Semple was brought in to kind of tweak the script a little bit. And he obviously worked on the Batman TV series, Flash Gordon movie. I'm kind of curious as to which script got to
David
you.
David Newman's.
You got Newman's. So what were the changes?
Newman's script.
Okay, so what was tweaked between David Newman's and Lorenzo Semple?
More tongue-in-cheek, Lorenzo Semple's, and not nearly as heartwarming.
What did we miss from David's script? What was taken out that you're like,
oh. A lot of the heartwarming things, a lot of the human aspects to the character, a lot of the human aspects to the relationship with me and Ted Wass, that kind of thing.
Okay, so it's interesting too, because when you think about Flash Gordon and Batman, there is that kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of feel to those movies, and so that's what Lorenzo brought in?
Yes.
Were you okay with that, or did you kind of go, oh, hey, guys, can we not?
I wasn't okay with it, but what could I do?
You obviously didn't get a chance to do a sequel for it, but what would you have liked to have done for a sequel? Where would you like that story to have gone?
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure whether he would have gone back to the city and I would have stayed there. I never really thought about it because I didn't want to put the cart in front of the horse. So I didn't really think of it, but I did assume that he'd go home.
Yeah, you kind of could have had a reverse Crocodile Dundee thing there, where like you end up in the big city,
Yeah, that too.
Sheena swinging from the Empire State Building or something like that.
Yeah, you got that right.
That could have been very cool. And they didn't even do any marketing, really, for the film. I thought that was a little bit of surprising. Couldn't we have gotten some, Sheena's Zanzan Berry hair care products or something?
Yeah, it was very strange. I think there was a lot of hassle between Gillerman and the studio.
What attracted you to the character of Sheena? What did you like about her?
That she was a strong woman, stronger than the man. She actually protected him, and she was physically strong, mentally strong, and loved animals, and had a connection with the animals, which I feel I do.
Did you kind of get from the movie that you were the Superman character and Ted was the Lois Lane kind of character?
Sure.
What was he like to work with? And I mean, like, obviously he's okay with that, but what was he kind of like to work with?
He was fine. He was great. Didn't mind that role at all.
Was it a tough shoot?
Almost 6 months.
Wow. I mean, typically, just so for our listeners, typically on a movie production, what's your shooting schedule? Typical.
3 months. Three months.
And that can be even on a set, too. So you're in the middle of the jungle for 6 months.
Yeah.
Today, if that movie were made today, it'd probably be shot all green screen in a studio. So what did that do for you that the production company was willing to say, you know what, let's get out and get these real scenes, real environments?
Great. It was incredible. Being in Africa was one of the best experiences of my life. I loved it. I loved the country. I loved the people. They were wonderful people. It's a wonderful country. The animals were amazing. We worked in reserves, and it was just amazing.
Fans today probably know you pretty well from, as you mentioned earlier, that 70s show, Midge Pinciotti. Tell our listeners why your character divorced her husband, Bob, and moved away.
She was just fed up. They were together since they were 15 in high school and got married and had a kid that early. And she just needed to find her own space.
And she moved to?
California.
Was it to star on Broadway?
Oh, maybe. She was a flake. Maybe she said that.
I always thought that it was one of the coolest characters. And you actually came back and had to the show and had some competition from Brooke Shields.
That's right.
What was that experience of working on probably one of the biggest hit shows at the time and just such an incredible ensemble cast?
It was great. It was great working in front of a live audience. It was great working in comedy. It was right down the street from where I lived. It was the best experience. It was really one of the most fun jobs I ever had.
Do you think Midge and Bob got back together in the 80s?
Probably. She never could find Broadway in California.
Hey, what about your latest projects? I know the last time we saw you, was it in the Showtime series Barbershop?
Yeah.
Okay, so you took a little bit of time away from acting to tend to a family matter. Any plans to kind of get back in the game?
Yeah, I am. I'm going up for auditions for sitcoms right now as we speak.
That seems to be what you enjoy the most now.
I do. I really do.
The sitcom aspect.
Yeah.
What's your ideal role right now? What do you see yourself as? If somebody came in and said, we're going to have you do 5 years of this character.
I'd like to play a businesswoman or a crazy-ish type woman on a sitcom.
A little over the top?
A little over the top, definitely.
Where can fans find out more about you? Latest projects, appearances, website, any of those things?
TanyaRoberts.biz.
Well, you know what? Can't wait to see you back in the acting game very soon. Tanya Roberts, it's been a pleasure chatting with you today on Comic Book Central.
Thank you. Been a pleasure with you too, Joe.
Now, my thanks to Tanya Roberts for swinging into the lair for a chat today. Be sure to keep up to date on all of Tanya's projects at her website, TanyaRoberts.biz. And be sure to keep up on the latest on Comic Book Central online at ComicBookCentral.net. And be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you like what you're hearing, and I certainly hope you like what you're hearing, please rate and review the show while you're in iTunes. It really helps. Be sure to share The Lair on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network, and tweet me at the Tweety at ComicBookCTRL, and be sure to send me your emails, joe@ComicBookCentral.net. Well, folks, as the final page of a graphic novel flips over, so does Comic Book Central come to an end. But not for long. Next week on Comic Book Central, we are going from vine swinging to web swinging. Are your spidey senses tingling? Good, because the original Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, Nicholas Hammond, will be doing some wall crawling here at the Lair, and he's going to talk about his time portraying Peter Parker, the amazing Spider-Man, on the hit CBS series. No CGI back in the day, kiddies. Those were real stunts they were performing. Can't wait to talk to Nicholas about the show. Until then, have a sensational week. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the Lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Why don't you come in and wash? You're as dirty as a warthog.